Blog Talk Radio.
Not Kate Smith, but we got to do what we got to do. God bless America to start the show. Welcome to the Fighting Network Wednesday night sports presentation. I'm Don Henderson. We have our normal group of guests on the line to talk sports. And what a day of sports activity. So we'll get into all of it in just a second. But Frank Cowell, our executive producer, has a dedication he wants to get to first, and then we'll get to the sports of the day.
You know, Don, many times we walk through the world, and we see people, we meet people, we keep, someone said, we keep meet 1,000 people, keep 100 as friends, as companions, but only 10 as friends. And some of those are right here tonight. One of the persons is steps up to the plate with a very, that sounds very near and dear to my heart, and that's Doug Hamilton, and had made the big step today to become a father. It's not often that a person will step forward and adopt a child. The other special person in our lives will be his son, excuse me, Brandon. You know, everybody knows that their child is always the best child. But this kid has got, he's really got a great base. His mom is a wonderful person. His dad, it's good, you couldn't do answer anything better. But Brandon, as I'm told, is an athlete, a student, and just a wonderful child. So we're dedicating tonight's program to the Hamilton family, but especially to Brandon and Doug.
Well, Doug, we certainly congratulate you and the family. As Roger was about to say, too, we all congratulate you. That's a major decision for our family to make. And, boy, we give you all the best of it and all that we can hope for the rest of the lives of your entire family. So thank you very much, Frank, for bringing it up. One other note before we start. A great friend of mine died over the weekend, and I have to make mention of it, former Philadelphia Eagle quarterback, one of the most controversial quarterbacks traded. Went from the Washington Redskins to the Philadelphia Eagles. He played on five different National Football League teams, including Minnesota, played for the Giants twice, 16 years in the National Football League, and his number was retired at Wake Forest. He was a two-time All-ACC player, Norm Snead. Norm was a terrific, terrific guy. He and I were put together in the early days when he came into the Eagles, our station, Channel 29 at that particular time, got the rights to Notre Dame football. For some of the older folks, you probably will remember, but you didn't get games all weekend long like we have now. You only got one game. So in order to get the Notre Dame game or the Penn State game, nine times out of ten, you had to wait till Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon for the replays because they weren't allowed to put it on live as we have today. But Norm Snead and I did the Notre Dame game, one of the great seasons of all time. They were undefeated. That particular year, I played Michigan State in the biggest game of the year. Webster was the great linebacker for Michigan State. And Norm Snead and I got together, and we did the whole season, pre- and post-game for the Notre Dame games, and really enjoyed working with Norm, a terrific guy. Had a great career in his National Football League career. Never a superstar, but always a major contributor. So to Norm Snead and his family down in Naples, Florida, all the very best to them. All right, let's get to the world of sports.
He was on the other end of the trade of Christian Adolf Jurgensen.
That's what I said, one of the most controversial trades the Philadelphia Eagles ever made.
Yeah.
And that was it. Jurgensen, of course, Jurgensen McDonald, one of the great parts of the Eagles' presentation in those days, and he came from Washington to Philadelphia, and that was the way it went. Let's get down to Tampa, Florida right now, where on Monday night they had quite a game for all of us. I know our leading prognosticator had a little different score in mind for that Monday night game. A guy with a little trepidation normally, but not this time. He was very, very strong in his prediction that the season was going to be over down at Tampa Bay. Roy, what's going on?
Yeah, I missed the mark on that one, didn't I? I completely underestimated the ability of the Eagles to quit as a whole on their coach at the most important time of the season. I didn't think that was possible, but it happened. And I'm not going to say that 53 players of the 46 that dressed or whatever it was, the 40-some that actually played all quit. I don't see any quit in a guy like Jason Kelce. But at the end of the day, that team as a whole quit on Nick Sirianni. And I'm not sure Nick Sirianni had a very good game plan to begin with. Certainly didn't do what I would think most people would do in his situation, which is run the ball right down the Bucs' throats, seeing as how you had success with that the first time around. But, and look, the Bucs didn't play a great game either. They let the Eagles hang around for far too long. But I was just shocked, guys, at how little fight that there was in the Eagles. And, you know, if Nick Sirianni is fired, and I'm sure he will be if he hasn't been already, it makes all kinds of sense because you can't move forward with that mess. That team is a mess, and it's incredible how quickly it fell apart, really. It really is.
We talked last week about
last
all the coaching,
Super Bowl.
All the coaching changes, and we'll go over that a little bit later on in this show as well. Billy Wardell will join us in the next half hour to talk about it. He was there working the game on Monday night, and unfortunately, none of us could be there, and I would love to have been at the game myself, but just couldn't do it. And but, Roger, you and I talked before the game, and then we talked as we got close to halftime, and a couple of friends of mine called and said, turn the covers down. There's no reason to wait for the second half. And that was pretty much the story.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, I was working over at the Margaritaville, and I figured I don't even care about it. I figured that this is exactly what was going to happen. You could see it turn a month ago, 6 weeks ago, that this team was losing faith in not only Sirianni, but both the defensive side and the offensive side. And, you know, it's basically they put the flag up when they made the change to Matt Patricia. You know, you just don't do that. And players have been very vocal about that move. And that's why I just think that it's over with. It's done. Whatever happens is, you know, going to happen, and we move forward. But it's hard to believe that 1 year ago this team was getting ready for the NFC Championship and then a run at the Super Bowl and almost won, because this is not that team, not even close.
Roy, as you indicated in your opening comments, when we talk about Kelce and I'm not talking about the movie star now. I'm talking about the Eagle lineman, and you could tell how much it meant to him, because although in the fourth quarter, I mean, he was basically in tears. And after the game, he went around to so many of the people on the field and shook their hand. And now, formally has not announced that that's it. He's going to retire. He, you know, but they said it enough times to different players in the clubhouse, and I think you're exactly right, Roy, I mean, it just meant so much to him, but to go out with a game like that was just overwhelming.
Yeah, and I think he was overwhelmed by it as well. It's pretty obvious that he made he probably made a decision before the playoffs started that this would be his last run. And wherever the playoffs, you know, however far the Eagles went in the playoffs, one game or all the way to the Super Bowl, and, you know, if they could win it, that would be it. He would go out on top. But I think he was probably incredibly moved and maybe a little shaken by the fact that, you know, it ended so horribly. And that may be why he hasn't announced it yet officially. Maybe he's having a second thought, saying, I can't go out on that note, of all notes to go out on. I mean, I think he probably would have rather gone out on a bad season, on a, you know, 6-11 season, rather than to have been a part of an effort or lack of effort like that. I think he probably, you know, maybe is sort of rethinking that. My guess is he'll probably retire at the end anyway, but it just, you know, I could understand it if he decided, hey, I can't let that be the last thing I do in this league after, you know, such a great career, Hall of Fame, you know, worthy career, and he will be a Hall of Famer. So, you know, I think he was just absolutely shocked by it and disturbed by it, as everyone should have been. You know, Jalen Hurts looked completely lost on the sidelines. You know, it's and I think, you know, again, I just think we go back to the whole game plan. I mean, you got a quarterback with a, you know, who's not 100%. He threw the ball fine. He did fine. Jalen Hurts was, you know, better than advertised going into that game. But at the end of the day, you know, say what you want about the Bucs, you know, what, fifth ranked in the NFL in defense against the run. They're not that strong against the run. And the Eagles showed it. When they ran the ball, they were effective. They just didn't run the ball. Again, I think Nick Sirianni had a horrible game plan. You know, or maybe he abandoned it too soon. I don't know which one, but both were mistakes. They should have, you know, you go into the second half and you're still in the game. As bad as you were in the first half, you still had a chance. You just had to keep the Bucs offense off the field because you clearly weren't going to take the ball away from them. So again, I was just, you know, stunned by the approach that the Eagles took in this game, particularly on the offensive side of the ball.
Roger, we talked about it during the course of the early part of the game, and we talked about it last weekend on this particular show, the number of coaching availabilities now, six, I think, we're talking about at the moment. I checked the wires just before we came on the air to see if there had been any major announcements, whether any of the fourth further coaches were fired or, you know, whether Sirianni is still there. I don't see anything or any indication that any announcement is going to be made tonight. Maybe you guys did. Roger, did you see anything?
No, but I just want to follow up about Sirianni. Number one, he never called plays as an assistant when he was with the Colts. And he did call plays early on in his tenure with the Eagles, and then it was turned over to Shane Steichen. And the loss of those two coordinators definitely played a major impact in the demise of the Eagles. And the defensive team has definitely been very vocal about what went on, number one, with the new defensive coordinator and then the replacement. They didn't like that at all. But Brian Jordan, I think, he's buddies with Hurts and for years. And he was definitely not the right guy. But it just goes to show you that Sirianni, and I agree with a lot of people, he is a great front man when things are going well, but cannot adjust to when things start to fall apart. And that showed in his leadership. I saw today in one of the publications from Philly that the money for some people is on Mike Vrabel. I think that would be a great pick. I think that would bring stability and turn things around. They've never gone for an offensive or a defensive coach. They've never hired a head coach with that was previously a head coach in the NFL. So this would be something new. But I think younger guy has a great track record. I think he's a terrific coach, was a great player. I think he's the right guy for this team.
Well, let's go over some of those. As Roger just indicated, let's take the biggest name first. And that, of course, the coach of the New England Patriots that was fired, Bill Belichick. There's some speculation of a number of places that he may go. First of all, Roy, what would be your assessment of Bill Belichick?
Well, I think you got to judge and see where his heart is. How badly does he really want to coach? How badly does he want to prove that the last 2 years, in particular, maybe the last three, we're not what he is as a coach, that he's not just, that he didn't just benefit from having Tom Brady as his quarterback for all those years. You can make that argument. So I think that's how you got to judge that, because if he's available, and I agree with Roger, Mike Vrabel would be certainly one or two on my list, but I suppose I'd have number one. It would be Bill Belichick for this team in particular, because they're ready to win. I don't think there's bad talent here. I don't think it's a matter of talent. I just think it's being horribly utilized. And so I think if Bill Belichick is interested in the Eagles job, I'd be on him immediately. And if he's interested in continuing to coach and really has a passion for it still, he would be my number one choice, followed by Mike Vrabel. I don't know that – I mean, I think I said it last week, guys. I don't see Pete Carroll coming east. I think he's going to stay on the West Coast.
Well, he's still an employee, too. But the Seahawks are still – he's still an employee of the Seahawks. He's going to be his title is advisor. I don't know where he's
– Right.
Yeah, legally, that can change quick.
Exactly. That can change quick. And we'll see if that's what he wants to do. Maybe he's ready to ride off into the sunset. Maybe he is. And this would be one way to do it. Bruce Arians did that, with the Bucks. And maybe some of these older coaches have decided, hey, maybe it's not a bad way to go. I had my run, take some pressure off, relax a little bit, stay involved in the game. That's one way to go about it. But if I'm the Eagles, I think there's two choices right now. It's Belichick or Vrabel, because I think you've got a team that's ready to win, And you need a coach who's proven he can win. And to me, in my opinion, those are the two guys at the top of the list.
I think one of the things you touched on at the top, Roger, was the fact of age. My personal feeling is that going backwards, I know Belichick's got a great record, great track record, and so forth. But I would be in favor of Vrabel only because I think he needs newer and younger people. I don't think he can go backwards. Yet somebody 71 years old, no matter where he decides to coach. But go ahead,
Don. You're exactly right. And listening to what's going on in the Eagles' locker room. Where Cox and Graham and the senior members that were in the Super Bowl, the winning Super Bowl, okay, oh, they're respected, but, okay, they're the previous generation. And that's why I think it takes – those guys are going to be gone. And now you're going to have pretty much a much younger team, nothing like the Packers, but you're going to have a younger team, and I think you got to have a younger guy as the coach, and I don't see a 71-year-old man, no matter how great he is, I do not see him, and I think that was one of his problems in New England, relating to the way these players are today. I mean, it's a different world today, my opinion.
No question, and the Steelers coach already announced today that you know, he's definitely coming back to Philly's last year of the contract with the Steelers, and he was not thinking about retirement regardless of what people may have written or said. As of today, his latest comment was that he expects to be right where he was this year, and that's coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Roy, before we jump off this and go to another topic, of all the other candidates in different areas, who leads up in your mind? Is Harbaugh one of the leaders? Is somebody else one of the guys that you think is almost an automatic to get one of these jobs?
You know, I think there are so many good candidates that it's hard to say anybody's automatic anywhere. The other thing you got to remember here is Mike McCarthy might be available. And, you know, it may not be the guy at the top of your list, but, you know, he's won wherever he's gone. Maybe he doesn't win, you know, enough for some, but he wins more than others. So if you're looking for experience, you know, that's a guy to certainly look at. So, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting group this year because I think a lot of teams were ready to kind of make a move with some of the younger coaches. I mean, I've heard Raheem Morris's name mentioned a couple of times, you know, already. And there's several other coordinators out there that are, you know, certainly getting interest. But, you know, I think names like Belichick, Vrabel, and McCarthy trump them all if you've got a team that you think is ready to win. Now, if you're rebuilding, that's a different deal, you know. But right now we're talking about, you know, the Cowboys aren't rebuilding. They're ready to win. Eagles aren't rebuilding. They're ready to win. So let's see where this all goes because I think you've got several teams out there that that feel that they're right there. And some of the coaching decisions have been a surprise already, and there may be some more surprises along the road. So, you know, let's see where everything goes.
Well, one of the things about the Bears, they're speculating again, they're going to take that number one draft choice for a quarterback. And they're taking that number one draft choice for enough quarterbacks. We'll see what happens there. Roger, anybody
here's
you see
idea.
Is a...
Well, there's
here's an
there
idea.
Was talk... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Roger. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Roy. That's fine.
I was going to say, you know, there's a guy out there, Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably worthy of a number one pick overall, especially if you've got a quarterback like the Bears do. And are you going to completely ignore the fact that, you know, Justin Fields seemed to find himself a little bit here in the last half of the season? Maybe he's not playing at the same level that C.J. Stroud is or that, you know, Love is, but, you know, those guys got a little bit on him. So, you know, certainly Love's got experience on him in terms of at least being in the system for a little bit. You know, look, I don't think the kid's a bad quarterback, and I just think it's a losing proposition when you just keep changing quarterbacks every 2 years. You know, you go from Trubisky to Fields, now to who's the next guy. You know, there's no guarantee with the quarterbacks, and maybe you ought to just build around that guy and see and see if that works.
Well, before we run out of time with you, Roy, let's double up here a little bit. Billy Warnedell's on the line a little early, so let's bring the bunch of us together here. Billy was in the press box. He was right there with Merle Reese and broadcasting the game on Monday night. Billy, before you start, the one thing you told me last week, and I'll tell you, if anybody around the country is listening to Billy Warnedell, and we'll give you his credentials in just a little bit, Billy is straightforward. And the first thing Billy said to me last week, I overestimated the value of these players on this team in 2023. Billy, is that what you told me?
Absolutely, Don. I looked at going into the season. They had the best, it looked like, on paper. And you know what you can do with paper. You can throw it in the trash can. Best team on paper going into the season. Of course, that did not play out, especially down the stretch where they embarrassed themselves. I mean, from top to bottom, the general manager, the head coach, the players. It was embarrassing. They lose to Drew Locke in Seattle, a second-string quarterback, and then you have a situation they go to Dallas and get they go to New York, they have New York at home and they lose almost lose that game, intercepted by Ringo. Then they get embarrassed by the Arizona Cardinals, who won three games going into that game. And then at the Meadowlands, they look awful against the Giants, who had their cars packed and ready to go. So you tell me. It's an embarrassment, this football team this year. When the look, it's one thing if the expectations weren't so high, but people thought they'd be in the running to go back to the Super Bowl. I know it's tough to go back, but they didn't go back. They went backwards.
Right.
Let me throw one thing at the three of you. We'll start with you, Roy. At the end of the training camp this year and the season opening up, everybody is – putting all kinds of accolades over the general manager. So, he got a player out of Georgia that's going to take over the defensive line. He's going to be the player of the next 10 years for the Philadelphia Eagles. They got a long-term contract when nobody else got a contract with their quarterback for $10 million. I mean, they're giving all these accolades for all these things that they did right, and it turned out to be wrong, Roy.
Well, I don't think the personnel is wrong. I still think that this team has an immense amount of talent. This is still the team that went to the Super Bowl last year. It's not missing many pieces from that. But what was missing at the end clearly was some kind of drive, determination, a will to win. All that was gone. And the mystery is, where did it go? How did it disappear? What happened? Because halfway through the season, it still looked like the Eagles, they weren't playing well, but we figured, okay, they'll figure it out. Halfway through the season, you thought it's going to be the Eagles and the 49ers in the championship game, as long as the Eagles can get things straightened out. And everybody figured they would. That's the thing is, I mean, look, I told you guys this story before about Simeon Rice the year after the Bucs won their first Super Bowl, and they were having such a struggle, much like what the Eagles, did this year. And about, two-thirds of the way through the season, we went to Simeon Rice at one point and said, what's happened here? And he said, man, some of the guys on this team are still waiting for the rest of the confetti to come down. They never moved on. They never stopped celebrating. They never stopped – they rested on their laurels, so to speak. And I think, despite the fact that you've got absolute pros on that team, I think Jalen Hurts is one of them. Kelsey's clearly one of them. Cox, there's others. It just seems like a good chunk of the guys on this team weren't mature enough to handle winning at the highest level. And they didn't win the Super Bowl, but they got there. And I think they just felt like, instead of taking that unfinished business approach, it was kind of left as we just I don't know, it's kind of like they just decided, okay, we're as good as we think we are, and all we got to do is throw them the helmets out there and win, and that'll do it. And it wasn't it.
Roy, Roger? You made a very good.
Go ahead, Billy.
Roy, you made a very good point about just throwing your helmets out there and play. The one thing that bothers me about the Eagles, and Javon Hargrave said it best. He was a free agent, went to San Francisco. He said the practices were a lot different in San Francisco than they were in Philadelphia. I think you have to work guys in practice. You can't go through half speed, three-quarter speed, especially against the blitz, because the blitz will tear you apart if you're just going half speed in practice. Then you have to really rev it up for the game. I really think that this team is not conditioned right. I mean, when you look at Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis, they were playing at a high level early in the season. They disappeared
right.
The second half of the year. They couldn't tackle me in a phone booth.
Right.
That's true.
Roger.
You know, you're right about the blitz. And that brings up another thing, and I'll leave you guys with this. This is my last thought on this. Well, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, you know, going forward. But it's not very often that Todd Bowles out-coaches another coach in the NFL. But he absolutely out-coached Nick Sirianni. You know, he brought the blitz consistently, which should have been a big red flag. The Eagles never should have allowed that to happen. Again, refused to run the ball, refused to take advantage of the over, you know, somewhat over-aggressive nature of the Bucs defense, which, you know, you put yourself in all kinds of danger, but they didn't have a play for that. I don't remember seeing a hot receiver on a blitz. Does anybody else? I mean, I'm sure there was one there, but you know, I don't remember seeing a hot receiver. I know one doesn't hit very often. No outlet passes, nothing in the flat. I mean, it's just like they had no plan whatsoever for Todd Bowles, who is just, you know, Captain Blitz. Let's face it. I mean, it's what he does. It's his only trick. And they just had no answer for it. So that's another, to me, just a damning indictment of Nick Sirianni and his coaching staff, is the fact that if you get out-coached by Todd Bowles, boy, that's hard to do. That's real hard to do. That almost makes you wonder, it's like, what were these guys doing for the week leading up to this game? Did they sleep in? What did they do? Because they sure as heck didn't put together a winning game plan.
Roy, thank you very much, as always, and appreciate you staying a few extra minutes with us to get on with Billy as well. Roger, you're up there.
Okay, have a great week, Roy.
Thanks,
Bill,
guys.
You know,
appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Take care. Billy, you were there. What's your analysis? I expressed mine earlier about what's going on in that locker room. Number one, the defense was uptight about the change of D.C., Matt Patricia's, I don't think he ever really called any plays because Belichick was doing that defense. And then he was a disaster at Detroit. I do not understand why that guy ever got hired and put in that position, because bad as the defense was previous to him, it got worse. And do you think Hurts has regressed where he won't come back, or do you think there's still a lot of talent there with him?
He has a lot of talent, all right? But he leveled off this year. I won't say he regressed. He leveled off. Had 20 turnovers this year, which is a red flag. I mean, you look at the total body of work of this football team down the stretch. The week before they played Tampa Bay, what did Wink Martindale and the Giants do against the Eagles? They blitzed. You would think after that game that they would realize you have to do something to adjust to the blitz. They did not do that at all. And that's mind-boggling. I mean, I just look at this franchise right now. How can you bring the coach back that had such a disastrous run at the end of the year in a negative way? These players believe in Nick Sirianni? That's the big question right now.
Yeah.
Do they believe in him? That's the big question that Roseman and Laurie have to make after they have the meeting with Sirianni. Because I've talked to so many people in the last 24 hours, 48 hours, and they've said they've never seen a collapse of this magnitude. Never.
No.
All right?
The three of us never have. Yeah.
You know, they could bring up Kotite, but Kotite's team was not, they might have made the playoffs, but they weren't a team that people said, hey, this team's going to be in the Super Bowl next year or be in the NFC Championship game. At the very least, the NFC Championship game. They couldn't get out of the first round of playoffs. Give me a break.
Right. And it was a disaster then.
You bring up a good point, Billy, in the fact that, I mean, don't you learn from the week before when you see what the Giants did, and even with all the conflict with their defensive coordinator, too, who got into a shouting match with their head coach and walked out. But, I mean, when you see what Martindale did, don't you realize that same thing may happen to you the very next week with Todd Bowles if you don't make some adjustments?
No question about it, Don. No question about it. Again, it's mind-boggling to me. And as I said at the outset, I overestimated this roster. You know, again, paper's great for the wastebasket. You have to do it on the field of play. And they have a lot of age on this team. Kelsey's talking about he might reconsider not retiring, even though he told teammates he's retiring. Brandon Graham wants to come back for another year. You have Darius Slade, 33 years old. You have Bradbury, who's missed has lost a step or two. Kevin Byard, their safety, is north of 30. I mean, you've got a lot of age on this team. And Zach Cunningham and Nicholas Morrow were on the scrap heap, two linebackers. They don't emphasize linebacking play in this league. And that's so important. Look at the good teams. The Ravens have good linebackers. The 49ers have good linebackers. The teams in advance have good linebackers. The Eagles think that they can put a Band-Aid where a tourniquet's necessary, and it's not going to work out. T.J. Edwards, they didn't even offer him a contract. He signs with the Bears and he's a Pro Bowler. You tell me how that happens.
Roger?
Well, it was like you said about Hargrave, you know, going to San Francisco and making the statement that just the operation and the practices are totally different than Sirianni's. And, you know, what about, you know, the thought process about Sirianni never – we knew he never called plays before he got hired as the head coach. And then he relinquished that early in his first year, and they made the playoffs. And, of course, Stipen was in charge. And then we had the defensive coordinator, Jonathan, you know, that's with the Cardinals.
Gannon.
And so what do you think about their choice of replacements, even though it was in-house? Because I'm not impressed with either one.
I like Brian Johnson's hire. I didn't know that much about Sean Desai, you know. I would have gone a different direction. They wanted Fangio, but he got the job in Miami when Gannon left. And that was a real bone of contention with the Eagles because they thought Gannon was going to come back. And they lost Fangio to Miami. But, you know, I just look at this operation and say to myself, where are they going? What is their direction going forward? I mean, Lane Johnson's long of the tooth. Jason Kelce's long of the tooth. You can't keep bringing back aging veterans. You looked at that game on Monday night, Vita Vea, the big nose tackle, just controlled Jason Kelce. Threw him around like a rag doll, all right? And when that happens, you got to start wondering how much this guy
We passed this around in the first half hour of the show, too. And now, if you're Howie and you're looking now to make a change if they decide that Sirianni is not going to be the guy, and he still has 1 year remaining on his contract, and so does McCarthy down there in Dallas. He still has 1 year to go, and whether Jerry's going to, you know, unload that or not, I don't know. Nobody else does either except Jerry. But if you're in that spot, if you're in Howie's spot right now, do you look at the potential list of coaches on the – Do you look at Belichick at 71 and say you want to bring him into Philadelphia and have him coach his team because maybe they won't win for 1 year? Or do you want to get a younger coach? You know, you want to get a guy that is going to come in at 34, 35 years old and coach a team for the next 10 years or 15 years if you got the right guy.
Kind of lean towards the guy that just got let go by the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel.
Yeah. Right.
That's right. We all do. Now, that's exactly right.
We all do. Yep.
I look at Belichick. Has he lost the edge as a coach? That's the question I have. Can he regain that mojo that he had when the Patriots were sailing along with Tom Brady and company? Can he do
but
that?
But for how long, Billy? Let's say he does get his mojo back for next year. Is he going to have the next 4 years or 5 years when the Eagles are going to –
If he has a quarterback and he has a roster that's constructed properly, yeah, he could stick around. Absolutely. As long as, you know, he feels as though that the roster's there that can get him on a consistent basis to the championship game and the conference and every couple of years to the Super Bowl and not bounced in the first round of the playoffs.
Roger?
Well, I think that his buddy Nick Saban, made a great statement by retiring. I think he's 71 too, isn't he? Same as
yes.
Belichick.
What's wrong with 71 years old? Man,
listen.
I'm so tired of people saying, "Oh, he's 71, he's 75." Look, if a guy can coach, he can coach. Damn it! I mean, that's the thing. I mean. You know, I hate this age factor. The guy's a great coach. He's going to continue to be a great coach. I mean, I believe right now, if you called Dick Vermeil up, offered the Eagles job, I guarantee for 2 or 3 years, you know, Dick is fast approaching the 9-0 number. All right? But I think he could do it. Believe me.
He could. You're
absolutely.
Right. Yeah. If anybody could do it, it's him.
I don't worry about age with a coach. Still has the desire to go out there and coach up the players. I take a shot at the Belichick. All right? And even a Pete Carroll, who I'm not the biggest fan of. These guys have won. That's what you want. Winners.
Winners.
He's the same age, too. He's 71 also, Bill. He's the same age.
Right, exactly. But they win. All right?
Yeah, and I to be honest, I think with Saban, I think it's all the way college football and sports is changing with the portal and all this stuff. Where,
well,
you know, you recruit.
You can talk about the portal, the NIL. Blame the NCAA for that, Roger. People at the NCAA. They are the ones that dropped the ball, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, coaches are tired of this because they have to re-recruit their players every day, all right? But blame the NCAA. The guy that should be in a penitentiary is Mark Emmert. He did nothing, nothing to say, hey, we got to get a middle ground here. It's coming. Let's find the middle ground, all right? I don't want to bring up Sonny Vaccaro all the time. Sonny has got calls from both sides of the aisle in Congress. He hasn't got a call from the head of the NCAA. Don't you think they should call and try to find that middle ground, that this is
right.
Not a total boat race?
Well, obviously what they've done so far, Billy, has been a disaster. I mean,
disaster.
You can't be bringing in, look at prime time out there. He comes in and he throws out, 40 or 50 players? How can bring in 40 or 50 new players? What? How can you run a program like that?
Don, let me tell you something. And this is the NCAA's problem. If you offer a kid a scholarship, all right, not for 1 year renewable, 4 years. 4 years. He gets hurt, you're on the hook for those four years. If he's academically eligible, you can ask him to leave school. But these are one-year renewable college scholarships now, which is absolutely a farce.
Roger, it is, and they working with the numbers and you know where the allowable and all this stuff. But, you know, bringing up primes, there was one speculation that he could go to the Cowboys and turn them around. What do you think about that, Bill?
Roger, you haven't spoken that wacky tobacco tonight, are you?
No, not me. I'm just telling you what I read, what a guy posted. I thought it was crazy.
Well, did he win a championship at Colorado this year?
No.
All right.
He had his glory days the first two games of the season. That was the end of his year.
That's right. Exactly. And you know, let's see what he can do for a couple, 3 years before we start talking about prime time being the next head coach of the Cowboys. But look, I wouldn't put anything by Jerry Jones. He can do something really off the wall.
I don't think he's going to go that crazy. I don't think that's going to happen. At least I hope it doesn't. I can't imagine that happening. I mean, I know he's a little confused right now as to what he wants to do, but holy smokes.
Well, he's the general manager, isn't he? He makes
the general manager and owner. Owner, he owns everything, right. So he can do whatever he wants to do, you know.
Right.
That, I don't know. As you said, it's the whole program has changed so much in all of sports right now, and now that the National Football League's going through the same thing, just like putting that game on a pay for scale. Here you are paying for all these games.
I would never, if somebody gave me the money to play for Peacock on Saturday night, I'd have given them money back and given them $5 more. Because I will not watch anything on Peacock, Apple, or Amazon.
Now, I really said that this week. This time last week, I said exactly the same thing. They can charge you $2.50, give you a free month, all that stuff. I wouldn't pay 1 cent. If they paid me $20 to watch it, I wouldn't watch it. So
I agree.
I don't care where the commissioner goes. That's right.
On the radio with Kevin Harlan. No big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, how much money can they – it's getting so greedy now. How many betting commercials are we on the pregame shows?
God, look, we saw it last year with the Atlanta Braves and a couple teams in baseball had advertising on their uniform. That is the next avenue of more revenue for the NFL, Major League Baseball, hockey, and basketball. It is coming, Don. It's going to look like NASCAR.
No, you're right, Bill. And I'll tell you what I heard this afternoon on the Chris Russo show. He had the former Mets general manager, Steve Phillips. They were talking about it looks like Amazon is going to bail out the RTN? You know, these regional networks, and I know it doesn't affect
absolutely.
You up there.
I would love to sink their teeth into that. No question about it. Makes sense. And that's
but they're also
happen.
Saying that
absolutely
ESPN,
right.
I talked to you, Roger, about the ESPN's going to merge with the NFL and become a major portion of the National Football League.
Now remember, and the news will be controlled by the NFL.
That's right.
Right. That's what's happening. The news will be controlled by the NFL. It's going to happen in all major sports.
Yeah, well, they had said that Major League Baseball was going to try to get into the or they thought they had something going about the RTNs. And then all of a sudden, Amazon is in there, and it looks like they're making the deal. But you're right about the NFL. I'll tell you what, I think Howard said it on Saturday. The NFL is the world's largest corporation.
Howard who?
You know who it is. I agree with what he said. I mean, the NFL is the world's largest corporation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's not a revelation, is it, Roger?
No, not at all. Not at all.
They are the people that dictate everything today in sports. I mean, you know, if they want to play a game at 1:30 in the morning, they will play a game at 1:30 in the morning. All right, simple as that. The NFL dictates the television. I mean,
yeah. Well, let's go to one other. Let's jump off that for a minute, Billy, before we run out of time. It's 10 minutes of it, and I know we keep you longer than we say, but let's go back to the National Basketball. So now they're going to put that championship series in the middle of the season again. The commissioner says, I don't know what that was supposed to have done for the NBA. And how about the 76ers? Now, is their big guy MVP? Is he going to stay healthy? Can he play?
No, come on, Don. I mean, he's missed 10 games already this year. I mean, come on. You got to play games. You have to play at least 65 games to qualify for the MVP. You think he's going to play 65 games this year?
No.
He's trying not to.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, come on. I mean, look. They just made a big deal, the Pacers, with Toronto. Sixers got to do something. They've got to upgrade their roster to stay up with the Joneses.
Well, the Knicks made a great deal with Toronto. They made a great deal when they picked up that defensive offensive guard that he's played great since he came down from Toronto.
Anobi, yes.
Right, Anobi.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely
playing great. But the problem with them right now is they got two guys on the bench. You know, they got the former Villanova players are all hurt. They're both hurt.
Right.
Bill, you know, go ahead, and we'll talk about one positive. No, I was just going to say one positive in Philadelphia sports is the Flyers seem to have turned it around, and they're back.
Well, hopefully they can sustain it. It's about sustainability. Can they get in the playoffs? That's the key. Even if they're the last seed in their conference, they get in the playoffs. That should be their goal, get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And anything can happen. You're right.
Well, down here, fellas, down here we didn't get a chance to talk to Roy about it tonight. I wanted to. And, what was it, 600 wins for Cooper over the weekend. I think the third quickest time of any coach in you know, that's going back to the great coaches in the National Hockey League.
Scotty Bowman, people like that. Yeah.
That's right. You're in very delicate hands when you're up in that group, and Coop already got there. He you know, this weekend, and so Tampa Bay, even though they're struggling around that 500 mark most of the season, maybe he's going to be able to right the ship. And I see today where they said that they're not making any trades with any of their key players prior to the trading deadline, that they're going to stay here for the remainder of the season. So it looks like they're going to fight it out with what they have, Billy.
You know what? You mentioned Cooper, 600 wins, right? Changing coaches every 2 weeks. You have to have stability in your organization. And, you know, you can't blame the coach because the team falls on tough times. All right?
Well, let's follow up. Do you think Sirianni's going to be staying?
Saying one thing, that is a tough call. If I own the club, I think I have to give him his walking papers. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He might be a great guy, but this team just totally caved in. It's one thing if they were lost, you know, respectably, you know, gave Tampa Bay a hell of a game and came down the wire. Tampa Bay could have put 50 points on the board against the Eagles easily.
Yeah.
Had a number of dropped passes in the first half. That could have been an ugly, uglier game than it was. But, no, I think you have to turn the page with Sirianni, to be honest with you, because I don't know if these players believe in him anymore. When players start not believing in the head coach, you got major problems.
Billy Wardell, our special guest this half hour, is always Billy, one of the outstanding sportscasters in the Philadelphia area, but not only in Philadelphia, spent a great deal of time out in San Diego. And, of course, they're in a coaching change. They got an owner that likes to change coaches in the middle of the season. Billy, if you had a club today, you know, we got a great number of very qualified people from Belichick down, as you indicated in this first part of this half hour. If you were an owner of a team, what direction would you be going in? Would it be Belichick, Vrabel, or would it be Belichick, Harbaugh, or would it be Harbaugh and somebody else?
Harbaugh is a very interesting guy because he's won at both the collegiate and the NFL level. Here's how an operation should work in pro football and all sports. The general manager goes out and procures the talent, whether it's through a draft or through free agency or trades. The coach coaches the players. Okay, the general manager could say, hey, guy's struggling. Why are you keeping him in the lineup? Well, I have a feeling that he's going to turn it around. We have too many general managers that are meddling in every sport that they want to dictate to the manager. And we just saw it this year with a tremendous, tremendous managerial job that Bruce Bochy did. Remember, he went down and said to Chris Young, Chris, I'm going to run the baseball team the way I feel is necessary, and we'll get this job done. I don't think even Bruce, they would win a World Series, right? But he told them, I don't mind the information, but you're not going to dictate from upstairs what pitching change we should make, blah, blah, blah. Don, you live down in Tampa. Kevin Cash, Snell is breathing through the Dodgers. But the third time through the order, we got to take him out. And what happened? The Dodgers won the game. You
That's
have
right.
to let the manager or the coach coach. The information is good before the game, but things change dramatically during a game. You have to go on your eyes and your feel.
Roger, we'll let you and Billy close out this half hour. Go to it.
Well, the you know, answered my question. I will say this. Understand the Falcons have interviewed Belichick, and I think if they can get the quarterback situation resolved, I think they have a lot of talent. The some of that offensive power they had has not been utilized by Arthur Smith, in my opinion, right at all. But what do you think? You think that Kelce will come back, or do you think that he will retire? I think that. That'll really tell the tale.
I think he has to walk away from it.
Yeah,
all right?
I agree.
Mean, you know, again, now he has a change of heart. I know it's tough to take that uniform off. But, you know, again, you can't keep going back to the well. We saw with the Phillies with Utley and Howard and Rollins.
Yeah.
We'll get one more year at them. It doesn't work, Roger. It doesn't work when a player hits the wall. Hit that wall real, real hard, and he comes toppling down.
Yeah.
Plus, Billy, you said there's so many people during the four, I guess the fourth quarter of last night's game in the clubhouse that it was fait or fatale. He was going to do it. He was going to retire. So I think it would be tough to make him change his mind.
Well, look, he's had a great career. Let's move on. All right, you have
Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer. I hope one guy that should be in the Hall of Fame, and they voted today, I believe, is Eric Allen. Eric Allen of the Eagles deserves the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's a real injustice he's not in there.
Yeah, they had the meeting in Atlanta because Ira Kaufman, who we have on a lot, Bill, you know Ira. He couldn't be with us tonight to talk to you too because he was on his way home. Frank said, and he won't get home till like 11 o'clock from Atlanta. They had a 2-day meeting on the seniors, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I agree
all
with
right.
you about Allen.
Thank you, gentlemen. I enjoyed it.
It's always a
Billy. Story. Before you go, wait a minute, Billy. Before you go, let the people around the country and around the United States and the world, the Billy Wendell introduction.
WCAT 95.3 on the FM dial. WCAT 1520 on the AM dial. 95.3 WCAT.com. Streaming worldwide. And also, Don, you can follow me on Twitter, the Wendell, WERNDL. Have a good night.
And also
take
on
care,
WCCB with the Paul Jolovitz. That show, too.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay, take care, Billy. Thank you very much. Our next guest, though, we don't worry about age with our next guest because we're going to go up and down the slide and get a younger view of what's going on right now. And course, Trevor Bosler, Jay, joined us last week. He's going to join us this week again, first of all, to talk about some of the playoffs in the National Football League, what he looked at as a young viewer, and then what he thinks about the USFL, which is going to get started next month. Okay, Trevor, let's get to it. What do you think of the playoffs so far?
There was a lot of really bad games in the wild card, to be blunt with you. A lot of one-sided affairs. I mean, the Pittsburgh-Buffalo game was tight at halftime, and then Buffalo pulled away. But as a Lions fan, the only game that really mattered and was of any actual relevance to the sport, I feel like, in this past weekend was the Los Angeles Rams taking on the Detroit Lions in Ford Field. That was a spectacular game, 35.8 million viewers. I mean, that's something that's rare. It's the most viewed game since last year's Super Bowl. It was a wild card game. Detroit's first playoff win in 32 years, hard-fought, historic season from this team. A lot of letdowns, too. The Cowboys getting smacked the way they did for Cowboys fans. I'm not a Cowboys fan or anything like that, but that was surprising. The Eagles putting up one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen in my entire life. It looked like the Birmingham Stallions and the UFL could have probably gone up there and scored a touchdown. But it was bad for a lot of teams and good for a lot of underdogs, too. I mean, look at the Bucks, look at the Packers. I mean, San Fran has a sleeping giant coming into town, and I'm honestly predicting an upset in that game, but we won't get into predictions. I'm sure you guys will probably do that later. But, no, a lot of really fun football in terms of, you know, my Lions winning. But other than that, I saw a lot of really good teams show that they're, you know, on a different level from the others.
Well, I think you look at the playoffs, as you said, a lot of terrible football. And that's what happens, whether it's baseball, football, basketball. You keep bringing in more and more teams into the playoff situation. I guess it's nice for the owners to make more money and the TV people to spend more money and the broadcasters to make more money broadcasting. But the games are terrible. The games are absolutely terrible. They're not worth watching. For the most part, as you said, the Lions game was a good game to watch, but most of them are very poor. And you know, by the halftime, especially the Eagle game, if you stayed on to watch the second half of the Eagle game, you must be you must have to go to work the next day, is all I could say. Roger, you're up.
Well, I agree, Don, and I'm sure, Trevor, you agree that quality is awful. And when Troy Aikman is really burying the National Football League and lack of proper tackling technique and lack of coverage, I mean, what does that tell you when they're getting buried on national television?
It tells you a lot, and honestly, you hit on a great point there with the tackling. Defenders, obviously on defense, are defenseless in this game. Offense has all the protection, and the more and more rules we see, and I mean, we can bring up the fact that they expanded the playoffs a lot and all that, but it really came down to this year defense for some teams really elevated and shut down a lot of offensive play. This was a down year for offense, and it showed. And obviously there was so many different starting quarterbacks, a lot of different injuries. And there's so many different things we can get into with the factors involved with that, with how the NFL is a monopoly as it is. It needs to switch to all like real grass. There's career-ending injuries and season-ending injuries happening every Sunday on terrible turf, which, you know, 2 inches underneath it is concrete, and it's really affecting play. There's so many other things, but honestly, just a shout-out to the defensive coordinators. And honestly, I think someone said the Houston Texans earlier, but they had a phenomenal game. C.J. Stroud probably having the best rookie season of all time as a quarterback. And just the heights he's going to be able to ascend to makes you question the quality of play you see out of so many other quarterbacks. Like, how'd they draft this guy, number 2 overall, when, I mean, the Panthers got it wrong. They got it really wrong. And, you know, he comes in and does this. And for some teams, they have to sit around and, you know, mess around with, just for example, like in Washington, they haven't had an actual quarterback there in quite some time. Or, you know, Atlanta with their mishap with Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke. I mean, it really comes down to competence with coaching. And we're definitely seeing a dip in that. But it's a different era of football for sure in its own way. There's big plays, you know, wide open guys screaming across the middle of the field because coverage is broken. Or in a lot of cases, I mean, guys are just getting to the quarterback so fast. I mean, guys like Max Crosby, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Miles Garrett, Aaron Donald, there's so many X-factor guys. And just, you know, it definitely will – you'll see the scales kind of tip in one favor or the other in a lot of these cases. And in this past weekend, it was definitely defense just bawling out, you know, halftime adjustments being made for teams and being figured out at halftime is never a good thing. And we saw that happen with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We saw the Broncos the Browns somewhat stay in it, but then they kind of, you know, Joe Flacco just threw too many picks. He was too errant with the football. And, you know, you just see stuff like that. And, you know, normally in years past, you never saw this kind of quality play. And if you did, you know, that team didn't deserve to be there. But it was definitely weird seeing the higher seeds get smacked around like they did, especially in the NFC East, like the Cowboys and Eagles.
Well, Trevor, you bring up the Pittsburgh Steelers game against, you know, Buffalo, and you look at the contrast in coaching there, and I'll tell you, Pittsburgh, what has it gone now? How many consecutive years without having a losing season, which is incredible for the coaching staff there. He's done a terrific, terrific job, and he said he is coming back next year. But the problem is, if you looked at that game, and you looked at the way Buffalo approached the game, Allen threw balls 5 to 7 yards. He protected his receivers. He didn't get them out in the middle of the field somewhere where somebody's going to hit them where the temperature down there is 17, 16, 18 degrees. There's snow on the ground. The ground is frozen, and as you said, concrete under that. They had two players out with concussions in the third quarter. I mean, you can't play in that kind of condition without protecting your receivers. And they did not, and let's face it now, Pittsburgh's working with a young quarterback that, you know, has very little time in the league, whereas Allen's had a lot of time in the league and is, you know, destined for bigger times to come. But you've got to protect your players, and they don't protect their players. They don't hang them out to dry. And if you do that, you're going to get people hurt.
In between the blinks, a lot of guys do go down. A lot of guys, you know, Zane Zylstra, tight end for the Lions last year, he had 2-3 touchdown games, tore his ACL in the offseason. I mean, a lot of players and a lot of things get, you know, left in between and, you know, kind of get buried. But it is a little concerning that, you know, you hear all the preaching about safety and all this new technology, the analytics and all this pointing towards, you know, we got to ban this type of tackling, this and this. But, you know, if we actually saw, you know, actual measures being taken place for replacing turf needs to be banned. It needs
but
to be banned.
They're talking about tackling in space. That's what it's all about, tackling in space. Well, if you're playing tackling in space in a game like that, you're going to get people hurt. They're not going to take a chance on getting themselves hurt. They let them go by. Go ahead, you go by. Your next guy down the line, 10 yards further down, he'll make the tackle. Don't worry about it. Roger, you're up.
Yeah, you just hand off. You don't want to take a hit and get hurt. See some of these defensive backs that are getting knocked
one-handed
out.
One-handed tackles. One-handed, Roger.
One-handed, I know. Or maybe they try a real quick one with the shoulder, and then it's just bouncing off and let them go. You're exactly right. Let it to the next guy. And it's not next man up either. It's just hopefully somebody else can do the job. But it's a disgrace. And I go back to, we talked about it, Don, you know, after on Monday night about Troy Aikman on national TV. I think, four times he just absolutely criticized the Eagles and the NFL. For the poor quality, because, you know, listen, ESPN doesn't want dog games on Monday night. They're paying a lot of money to get some prime games, and some of these are just a disgrace.
Well, as he said, I give him credit. You're right, whether it was four times or five or three. I don't remember the exact number, obviously. But at the same time, he made it obvious that this has been going on all season. It's not something that just has to happen during the playoffs. all year.
That night.
They,
yeah, right.
You know, the quality of defensive tackling has almost been eliminated for a couple of reasons. One, they don't have any practice. You know, the spring training has gone to nothing. Preseason has gone to nothing. Most of the veteran players don't even play until the first game. So, I mean, what are you going to have? You're going to have mediocre play, that's all.
I agree with the argument of mediocre play, but at the on the other end of the argument, I will also say Troy Aikman is a complete hypocrite in my eyes. The season career high of him for touchdowns was like 20. We see guys putting up 50, 45, 48. The game's changed. There's guys way faster, way smaller and faster, and equally as strong. Defensive backs have to be fast, agile. You know, granted, they're not going to want to hit all the time, and I know that that's a part of the game, but the coverage is a part of the game. IQ, I mean, granted, the fall off in hits and tackling, and that comes down to coaching for sure, and as well as, you know, high effort and motor. But at the end of the day,
well, you can't
really
touch anybody.
To
you can't touch anybody after they go 3 yards over the line of scrimmage. You can't chuck anybody. You can't do anything. How are you going to protect them?
Also, the other end of the argument is that the fact is, no matter what kind of hit, if you hit the quarterback, if you go low, if you do a chop block, if you avoid a chop block, if you jump the line, you get flagged. Defensive players get flagged for nearly everything they do. The refs go crazy for it. So you have to be smart. Time your contact. I mean, there's arguments and factors that weigh that argument out in my eyes. And I think that's why, you know, you see the game changing in that direction. Don't get me wrong, there's mediocre play across the board. But at the end of the day, the game is the way it is now because it's about fast-paced offenses that can create play-action space. And if you have an elite running back, you have an elite running back. Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Jahmyr Gibbs, guys like that are luxuries now. Aaron Jones going off for the Packers. He had 2 touchdowns all year. He had 3 against the Cowboys. I mean, we see this explosiveness, and defenses have to adapt or die. You're not going to have your guy on man coverage as much as you used to. He's not going to get as physical. He's going to be waiting in zone for safety help to either ball hawk, pick the pass, or make time contact to disrupt the completion. But it really
well, McCaffrey was clear to play this week. Had his calf injury, supposedly. He did not play last week, obviously, but he is ready to play this week, they say. So he'll be ready to go, right? One of the most effective players, obviously, in the National Football League in a long time. Roger?
I'll tell you, if I was Christian McCaffrey, I would consider if he wants to keep playing, fine. But if I was him, after what his tenure has been, and to leave this year, next year, but in the short term, because you know the way running backs are, and how quick they go down, and I know he's special, but I would want to leave there in one piece because what I see is he takes tremendous hits, and he's had a couple of injuries this year. So, and Kelce
every year he's had
every
a couple
year,
injuries.
Yeah, and he's getting older, but that's what Kelce said. He does not want to leave. With hardly being able to walk, and he said it takes him now to Wednesday or Thursday to recover to even feel like going to practice. Now that tells you something. After what, 13 years, and you're like 35, 36 years old. You know, you got to get your money and take it home with you because Christian McCaffrey probably winds up doing TV and making a lot of money on his name as he started to, you know, make already. And, of course, his father was Ed McCaffrey, the tremendous wideout, and also in the NFL. And also he's on Sirius XM. So, you know, also a Stanford grad.
Let's talk a little bit about the UFL because, Trevor, you've been following that a little bit, although – not really much to say about it now because they don't really start for another month yet. But where do we stand now? What's that? They're doing a lot of advertising on the NFL playoff games to try and hype up the interest for it. But how's it stand right now?
Well, actually, I'm glad you asked because the last time we talked about it, I was talking about their draft, which did conclude. They finished their super draft, which was 13 rounds. which was we talked about that last week, but it really consisted of drafting players still under contract. There is going to be a free agency period, which is already underway. We've already seen some movement. Excuse me. The big signings, I'll just go over a few. The first overall pick was quarterback Jake Dormandy. He played for the Orlando Guardians last year. Interesting story behind the guy. He got accused of giving the playbook to another team. Allegations were proven completely false. And then the game he was allowed to play, because he didn't play all season up to that point, he came in and threw for over like 400 yards. The team was terrible, but he was a bright spot for sure. So he's going to be on the San Antonio Brahmas. The Birmingham Stallions brought back some of their guys, the Quandre White, Bo Scarborough's back in Birmingham. He's a name guy. We saw them bring back quarterback Jalen Morton, Vinny Papali, Gladly. We talked about him. He's on the Memphis Showboats, and they had a really good draft. They drafted a lot of defensive players, and I'm not going to lie. I think between Memphis and Michigan, I would probably say those two teams and Houston, those three teams had the best draft. I don't want to say any negative things on the Birmingham Stallions. They did use a lot of their draft picks just to bring back current players that were still under contract, but they didn't pick them up in the offseason yet. So they wanted to just secure them on their roster, which was a smart play by Skip Holtz. He knows what he's doing. He can build a roster. They have the best roster in the league, hands down. But in terms of having the best draft and on improvement, I would say Memphis, Michigan, and Houston. Three teams stood out to me a lot. They drafted a lot of key position players. A lot of special teams guys went in this draft as well. Punters like Kyle Kramer, kickers like Matt Coughlin, and those guys played well in the USFL. I saw predominantly USFL players get drafted. Not a lot of XFL guys have been, you know, kind of retained from the teams that they dropped. And, you know, you can't forget they did drop four. So that's a lot of guys that don't have a job. But I am seeing a lot of movement to the CFL from former USFL and XFL players as well.
Roger?
Trevor, are they drafting any college players at all at this time and taking a chance? Or is that not in the rules and then they have to wait until after the NFL draft in May? How does that work?
A couple college guys were taken in realistic grasp. I saw a offensive lineman from Northwestern, a cornerback from Clemson. But like you said, the NFL draft is what matters to college athletes, especially in football. So they're going to wait for that first. And obviously, if they don't get drafted or if they don't get picked up as an undrafted free agent, they can fall back on the UFL, which the season will start pretty much right after that time period as well. So they can put out some tape and get picked up, you know?
Well, that's going to close out this segment. Trevor, thank you very, very much. Once again, good information on the National Football League as well as the USFL. And they'll be getting ready to go next month. A lot of advertising on the NFL playoff games, and the football will continue over the summer. So we'll go from there. Now we're going to switch to soccer.
Take care, Trevor.
Because
have
Mike Zimczak
week.
Is all ready to go down in Washington, D.C. A lot of news in Washington as well. And, Roger, I'm going to turn this over to you and Frank for the last half hour. And, Mike, go get them.
Okay. Mike,
hey, how you doing?
What's going on with the Commanders? And,
yes,
you know, with the way that they have structured the committee, and how are things shaping up, and how does it look to you?
Well, they've just announced the hiring of Adam Phillips as their GM. He was one of the top two candidates that the committee had advertised. And so that was pretty well received. The committee itself has been well received. Remember, a lot of people were thinking about this as, like, the committee that they put in place was there to hire with Rick Spielman and Bob Myers was there to hire the coach. No, they were going to identify a GM. And then Josh Harris, once he got the GM that he wanted, was going to kind of allow the GM to take the lead on hiring the coach. Now, it's possible that that move kind of theoretically could have set them behind as one of the top candidates that they wanted might have gotten snapped up last week, but it doesn't look like any of that happens. They're going to be able to interview the candidates that they want, and they got somebody who they feel is a viable candidate for GM. And let's be honest, this is the first time that they've had legitimate GM, player personnel guy, in quite a while. Somebody who's not going to be just basically a yes man, and who will be empowered to make not only coaching decisions, but also some contract decisions, player personnel decisions, things like that. So the front office is going to be structured more typical of how you would expect, where you're going to have a GM who's working on the player side, personnel and development side, and a coach who's going to be more the coach who's going to be in charge of the practices, the 53-man rosters, things like that. This was not what had been the case previously. You know, Ron Rivera, although he was the coach, he was also the director of football operations, so he hired the GM. He had the final say on pretty much everything. And we saw from a roster building standpoint how that went. This is a team that has a few skilled players on it, a very high draft pick, and then ostensibly a lot of cap room to work with. You'll see a lot of people talking about the fact that the Washington Commanders right now have about $100 million in cap space, right? And all the GMs were excited because they have $100 million in cap space. But the problem is the way Ron and Marty Herney and Mark Menju structured all the contracts, they also have like 24 free agents. So half the team are free agents right now. So you're going to have to use a lot of that money just to fill out the roster.
Right. Well, let me ask this. From I read a couple of articles that a lot of reporters, quote-unquote experts, they felt that the way they did that committee was those two gentlemen and Spielman and the other fellow, along with, I guess, some other people, they think that that's the way the NFL teams and sports as a whole is going to be operating in the future. They were very impressed with that because it was out-of-the-box type of a process, number one. And, you know, we've talked about earlier in the show about all these different coaching prospects, Belichick, you know, Vrabel, everybody. But nobody said anything about Ron Rivera. What is he retired, or has he indicated anything, or is he still interested in coaching?
I don't know what. Let me start with the Ron Rivera aspect of it. There's been no indication that Ron has hung it up, but there's also been no indication that he is interested in coming back in any capacity other than as a head coach, which might be a problem. You know, he's in his 60s. He's had the battle with cancer.
Right.
But on top of that, his on-field results just haven't necessarily been good. He had only three winning seasons with the Panthers before he came here, and none while he was here. He was left in charge of player personnel and given a lot of power, and the team regressed. So the last thing that anybody's going to see from Ron Rivera is a defense that collapsed in on itself, possibly because of his over-reliance and reluctance to get rid of Jack Del Rio, who should have been gone a while ago. His failure to pick up key players with his first and second round picks to address certain holes on the team. And then the guys that he did get, for the most part, have not panned out. He had to trade away two of his marquee draft picks in Montez Sweat and Chase Young, who just didn't pan out but needed to go. And so it's just the optics, the evidence that we have for Ron Rivera isn't that, as a head coach, isn't particularly great right now. So if he really wanted to coach again, I get the feeling that he would have to take a step down and become a defensive coordinator someplace, but I don't really necessarily feel right now like he's that interested in doing that. He's not his money. You know, he's not, like I said, he's in his 60s. So he's not a younger guy. You know, he's not in his 40s. He's not in his 50s. And he's been a head coach for, what, 11, 12 years? You know, I just don't think that he necessarily wants to take that role. So my guess is he's going to take some time off. He's going to relax. He's going to go out. He's going to play some golf. He's going to enjoy himself. And then he'll make a decision. If he wants to get back into the NFL, I'm sure there's an avenue for him. There will be defensive coordinator positions open, and that's where he can go. He may like that because he doesn't enjoy he doesn't have to deal with all of the pressure, and all he can do is, you know, one specific side of the ball and focus just on that and let somebody else deal with all the rigmarole. Or he could just decide, you know what, I've had enough. If I get back in, I'm going to want to do TV, and I can do some analysis, and that way I can kind of set my own schedule.
Well, you know, he can probably get a job as a replay official too. I mean, they have enough of them. They have enough of those spots throughout the league at various venues.
Yeah, he's pretty well respected within the league. The players like him. There's a lot of things that he could do. As far as the hiring committee, like, I've seen where everybody was agreeing with you, like, this is really revolutionary. This is awesome. I think it was interesting. But again, I don't necessarily, I guess it depends on your view of this. I don't feel like it was as earth-shattering, ground-shaking, you know, this is going to be the new next big thing as a lot of people do. I think that a lot of places hire firms. You know, we talk about college football, them hiring search firms to find this player, that player, that AD or this coach or that coach. That's basically what he did. You know, Rick Spielman's an NFL guy. Bob Myers is a player personnel guy. I understand that Bob Myers built a team in NBA basketball, and there's a vast difference between, you know, what it takes to build an NBA team and what it takes to build an NFL team. But they're not asking Bob Myers to come in and be the GM. They're asking Bob Myers for his opinion on, do you think this guy has what it takes to be a leader and set a culture from a front office perspective in an organization? And, you know, some representatives from the ownership were there. It was interesting. It's that earth-shaking that, you know, everybody's like, this is going to be the future. And Josh Harris suddenly had this idea that's like the next thing, NFL 2.0. I guess I would say I'm surprised that nobody else has ever thought to do that. And then if it's that earth-shaking, maybe that's another clear sign of sort of the insularity of the NFL, where they think that in order to have an opinion on how to be involved in an NFL organization, you have to have a background in the NFL and no other opinions count, because there's plenty of people out there who have run successful organizations who can come in. If they had said that they were hiring Bob Myers to be the GM, I might have some questions about, you know, what does he understand about putting together a 90-man off-season roster, the intricacies of the NFL draft and stuff like that. But they were just asking a guy to come in and help them pick, help them interview and help them pick a general manager who is then going to set up the most of the front office.
Yeah, like a board of directors group picking a new president of a corporation. And just like you said, like a head hunting organization to an extent.
No,
the,
I've been in plenty of interviews where, you know, somebody may be sitting in the interview for a teaching position who's not a teacher or has no background in education. They're just a community member, but they're there to offer their wisdom on what might be or something like that. So I'll do, so be it.
You know what, Mike? My services can be purchased, okay,
mm-hmm.
to evaluate teachers. Because now I feel that after previously in Hall County, but now in the last 2.5, going on 3 years, I have seen, especially when you're right there on site, you know what is a good teacher and what is not necessarily a bad teacher, but not a great teacher, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So
I know exactly what
listen,
you mean, but it's the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I wanted to get over, because mm-hmm. We haven't really spoken about soccer much in recent weeks with you. And
mm-hmm.
there's starting to have some things go on, because they're going to be going to training camp next month. The union will be in Florida near Clearwater and everything. But there has been some action with some key add-ons, I know, especially with the Atlanta United. I've got, you know, get their press releases, and they've made some good personnel decisions. At least that's what it appears to me, you know, from a fan's perspective, or, you know, not necessarily an expert in soccer like you.
Well, the transfer window, which is the this is the one in the middle of the year where pretty much every team worldwide can register new players. Atlanta United has been active. They've made a couple of signings. I'm seeing like Dax McCarthy, who was a former U.S. men's national team player. They've signed a couple of loanees. They're trying to figure out what to do now how they can push forward, because after a couple of years where they were at the top of the MLS, it's been a disappointing couple of seasons. And they need to figure out the right mixture to get all of that back together. I know that Brad Guzan, the longtime U.S. men's national team goalie, was gone, so we're going to replace him with a younger keeper. I still think that there are some moves to be made between now and the end of the month as they get ready to go to training camp early to mid-February. So we're still waiting to see how these rosters are going to shape up. I think the big signing that everybody was looking at was recently was down the road from y'all a little bit in Fort Lauderdale in Miami. Luis Suarez, who's probably Lionel Messi's, one of Lionel Messi's best friends. I mean, I think Suarez was best man at his wedding. He signed pretty much a minimum deal to play for Inter Miami to link back up. So we're going to, you know, it's that old, we're getting the band back together.
Mm-hmm.
Back one more time. But it's like, you know, when the Blues Brothers got the band back together the first time in the 80s, it was really, really cool. But could you imagine if they tried to do it again today? Like, the arthritis would be killing them. So it's more
mm-hmm.
like the Blues Brothers trying to get the band back from the 80s together in 2008. When they should probably be in the rocking chairs. We'll see how this works out. I think it's more of a short-term thing. It's a short-term, let's try and win a couple of trophies together, probably lift an MLS Cup thing more so than a long-term thing. I know that I'm almost up against it because our good friend Doug is going to be coming on soon. Roger, there's a really, really interesting announcement, not from soccer today, but from the world of rugby. One of the really young, promising Welsh rugby players decided to quit playing rugby right when they were announcing the squads for the next big tournament. He's going to try out at 22 he's leaving to go to IMG Academy. He's going to try out for the NFL draft.
Mm. Well, hey, listen, Jordan Mulata came from Australia. It took a few years to make him into a pretty good left tackle, but he did. He worked hard at it. Of course, he's got size. Does this guy, this guy have good physical numbers?
Well, his name is Lewis Rees-Zammit. He's a freak athlete on the wing. But Jordan Mailata, A, played a different type of rugby. B, had been told to start playing when he was in his later high school, college-age type years.
Yeah.
And then came to IMG. So he wasn't like the equivalent of a college senior who had already been playing one type of sport one way for a number of years and then trying to play a different one, number one. Number two, his size and particular position that Mailata played in rugby league lent itself more towards the blocking aspects that he was asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his skill set translated a little bit better. You're looking at a guy who would be probably best utilized as a running back or in kind of that way. He plays wing, which means that he's the speed guy. He's used to catching the ball and running. So he'd be a particular, he might be good as a running back, but you're probably going to have to put some weight on him. And then there's going to be the blocking aspects of it, which they don't necessarily do. They were pointing out, like, it's very hard. The number of players who have actually managed to successfully make that change is very, very few. But, at 22 years old, he's got wide receiver size, but he plays running back. He's about 6'3", 216, so he's got the perfect size to play wide receiver. But the position that he's used to playing is most akin to a running back. I can't imagine putting a 6'3 guy who's about 215 in the backfield and playing him at running back, but I might, he's a really quick kid. I just don't think that, he's going to have to learn how to run routes. What's a route tree, blocking, this sort of stuff. That's a lot to learn in a couple of months.
Yeah, we have a young man at one of the local high schools that is quite a lacrosse player. And was talking to one of his teachers, and he had been at the IMG Academy, I guess, for a year or two. And I know a friend of mine from my career, his son, well, he's now 30 or maybe a little older, but he went to the IMG for a couple of years when they were living in New Jersey, and then he came out. I think he was there freshman and sophomore, and then went back to his high school in his junior, or he was there sophomore and junior and came back as a senior. But he's a tremendous soccer player. And he's in that semi-pro league. They live in Charleston, and he's also, I believe, with for his employment, he's with a soccer equipment firm. And but I know he was great in high school, and I know his father. I don't know the mother. I know who she is. He had a younger brother, and then a sister went to Clemson.
I had a kid who went to IMG for soccer, and now he's got a scholarship to Penn State. And not all of them are going to be pros. Not all of them are going to declare early. Some kids just get that opportunity, and it gives them the skills to take another step forward in their academic career. And so,
that's what it's all about. So, well, listen, you're right. Doug's with us. So, Mike, have a great week. Always a pleasure. And with soccer really ginning up now with the MLS season upon us in a month or so, we'll have a lot more to talk about. So Take care. Have a great week.
Yeah, make sure you check and see if Doug's dug out yet. You know,
yeah,
that
Doug is with us. Doug, are you there?
The snow that we got in this area is really, really wreaking chaos.
Yeah,
go ahead,
we got the snow shovels out. We had I measured 4 inches, and I think we have a few more coming on Friday. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. I think the Ravens are going to be playing some football in some really chilly, frigid temperatures and possibly some wind. So we'll be in the warmth of our house watching that one.
Yeah. Well, it was 13 this morning when I left to go to school, and yesterday they did virtual because the heavy rain and everything. But I'll tell you, I had the parka out today, even though I wear a pretty warm jacket. I was glad to have the parka. But anyway, Mike, take care. We'll talk to you next week, and I hope you have a great week. Okay. Doug, talking about the Ravens, you know, they had the bye. Now it's their time to excel. There are some people I've heard on the different sources that think the Ravens may have trouble in this game because of the bye, and they look at Jackson's history, you know, in the playoffs. What do you think?
I think those people are probably Houston Texans fans or probably uneducated.
They always spoke highly of you, Doug.
Well, look, there's I would call it cautious optimism here in Baltimore only because, you know, you look at a bye week and – gosh, we went through this in 19. We went through this summer with the Orioles. And it provides you the opportunity to get a lot of your individuals healthy. You know, Mark Andrews practiced in full today, and that could be something that's a good thing. I think Marlon Humphrey has not practiced a whole bunch, even in a limited capacity because of his calf. But all in all, I think they're going to roll into this game pretty healthy. And I know that Coach Harbaugh was trying to keep them on schedule in terms of not allowing that rust to formulate. Again, after that 2019 season, we had, you know, the same situation and lost to Tennessee in that first round. So, you know, I think you're going to, you know, the pulse that I get from the stations that I listen to and media outlets is that we are incredibly excited about what we've done in the regular season. We are incredibly excited about hosting a home playoff game. Incredibly excited about, you know, only a couple wins from, you know, being in the Super Bowl. You know, so I think there's a lot of really positive things that are going on there. But then on the other side, you look at it and say, okay, well, we haven't played a game in 2 weeks, and even that game didn't count because a lot of our starters didn't play. I don't know. My feeling is that Baltimore peaked at the right time. They were playing some of their best football. You know, Roger, that same echo of individuals would have said, I don't know, Jacksonville's pretty tough. I don't know if we could beat them. Yep, we beat them. We got to go to San Francisco. They're pretty good. I don't know if we could. Yep, we beat them too. And then you're like, oh, Miami coming in. Miami's a high score. They scored 70. Yep, we beat them too. So I don't know. I mean, Houston is definitely a different team now than the first game we played against. So C.J. Stroud has grown up immensely over the course of the season. So yeah, it's going to be a different football game, and I totally understand that. But you know, writing this down on paper, you know, you can fold that up into a paper airplane if you want to. But you know, the Houston Texans have one Pro Bowler, and it's their left tackle. They, you know, they don't do anything particularly well, but they've, you know, obviously gotten to this point. I think Nico Collins is a problem. A bigger bodied, you know, wide receiver that is going to present a problem. I think that Dalton Schultz is a pretty good tight end. I think we have fantastic linebackers that's not going to be a problem. Their offense, Houston's offensive line isn't incredibly special. They don't run the football particularly well. So, I mean, again, on paper, you know, and look at it, this, the Ravens are 9-point favorites. I mean, you know, I know they have to play the football game, but as we sit here tonight and talk about it, with the way the Ravens have played down the stretch, I mean, I would think they would win this game 31-10. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I may have to eat those words, but that's, I don't know. I think the Ravens are on a mission to win this Super Bowl this year because they know this is a window that's closing rapidly. The team next year is not going to look anything like this one. I mean, we got lucky with Jadeveon Clowney on a one-year deal. We got lucky with, you know, Van Noy on a, you know, all these players that came in that played amazing are not going to be here next year. Justin Madubuike is going to sign, you know, a couple $100 million contract with somebody. Patrick Queen going to cash in with somebody else. So, I mean, there's a lot to play for this year.
Well, I agree. And the just look at the Eagles. We talked to Roy Cummings at the top of the show. He had the score basically right, but he had the wrong teams. Uh-huh. I mean, wrong team winning the game. I mean, you know, sure. So you just never know. I personally think the Ravens will be in the Super Bowl. I think they have proven that, as you alluded to. And I am not. I think that the Chiefs have come down to earth, so to speak. I don't know whether it has any influence from the loss of Eric Bieniemy or not. I don't know that because, you know, Andy is basically calling the plays and Bieniemy would implement it, and then it was different when he was with the Commanders. He is calling the plays. But, I would like to see Buffalo win. And then I think that would be a great match between the Ravens and Buffalo.
Selfishly, I think I wanted Houston to beat Cleveland. I think I was more scared of Cleveland's defense, than I was of Houston. I think I'd like to see Buffalo beat Kansas City because I'd love to see the Ravens win and play against Buffalo at home and, you know, get a little bit of redemption for the loss that they gave us in the playoffs. And then outside of that, I'd like to see Detroit work their way through the NFC and represent
too.
Them.
Yeah.
What a great story. Dan Campbell just vaulted to near the top of my list of, you know, coaches that, I mean, he is magnificent. My wife
tells
me
it like
piece.
It is.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Honest.
Yeah, there was a video. Apparently they were in the locker room, and Dan Campbell gave Jared Goff the ball, and he said, you're bleeping good enough for Detroit, aren't you, Jared? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
just the way that he said it, you know what I mean, knowing that basically the Rams cast him off and wanted Matthew Stafford as opposed to him. Really, really good, positive, you know, gritty kind of guy that you'd like to play football for, you know. Fits that team perfectly.
Well, yeah, and he played in the NFL, you know, and I think that when you've had that experience, and you look at Tomlin, you know, Tomlin played, and I think it really gives them a much better idea of what's going on. That's why we talked earlier that several of us would like to see Mike Vrabel as the new Eagles coach. And he's kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, I think what I read was there's going to be some significant changes made to the Eagles staff. It didn't seem like Sirianni was going to be one of those that was going to be removed.
They've got to get rid of
team. I mean, it hasn't been decided yet. They lost six of the last seven games, and Jeffrey Lurie's probably still debating. I had seen a piece that Mike McCarthy will return as the Cowboys coach, and Mike Tomlin will return as the Steelers coach. Contrary to popular belief, I really do hate the Pittsburgh Steelers, but Mike Tomlin is, to me, a class act. I love he's one of my top five favorite coaches in the NFL. I just think the way he carries himself, no BS, you know, how he handles the media. I really have a lot of respect for him as a head football coach. Him and Dan Campbell and trying to think.
Well, Dan Quinn was high on the list too, but I think his stock went way down after that Cowboys debacle.
Well, I don't know. He had a pretty good run there as their defensive coordinator, so I don't know that, you know, we can throw stones at him because he had one bad game. I think he'd be a good fit in Seattle where he's going to interview. I think he's probably deserving of a head coach job.
He was there as the defensive coordinator, with Pete Carroll before he got the head coaching job with the Falcons.
It's a finicky thing. I mean, look, you have owners and people that are going to be interviewing these guys. And you know, look, they all have ideas of X's and O's and what they know. I believe that's probably fairly, you know, static across the board in terms of a comparison point. But at the same time, I mean, how are you going to interview? What kind of personality do you have? How organized are you? How do you carry yourself? You know, all those things I think are super important to what they're looking for in terms of their fit, you know. The
but
scheme,
some of
I think,
are phonies about that too, Doug. You know, it's just like in life. I mean, they can be a great interviewee, but a lousy interviewer.
Right. No, I get it. I mean, it's like I say, I mean, Mike McDonald from the Ravens has interviewed a couple different places, and gosh, he was wonderful at Michigan. He's had a couple really good years in Baltimore. I met the guy. He's pretty sharp, and I think at some point he should probably get a head coaching job. I don't know that it's going to be this year, but I think he'll probably make the final list of a couple different teams as they continue their process. Roger, you know, guys like Dan Quinn and Bill Belichick and guys like that are going to Jim Harbaugh, they're going to win out because they've already proven themselves and they're an experienced. It's an easier trigger to pull to say, I'm going to give you this opportunity because I know what your track record is. You know, you give that to a guy like Mike McDonald, they're kind of like, oh, well, I just, you know, he was a good candidate. You know, look, he looks good. I really hope he does well. You know what I mean? But you don't know that.
Well, that's right. So. And there was a lot of talk or questions about whether the a replacement for Belichick with the Patriots, whether he would clean house, including the Belichick sons. I would hope he does.
That came out. Both of his sons are going to stay, is what they said.
Oh, they are. Well, see, that's what concerns me, okay, that you're going to have Belichick on, but his sons stay, so you still have the imprint of Belichick there. Yeah. I would hope that he would clean house, but I mean, it may be he keeps some of the coaches, but not Belichick's sons, because it's like the old story. You don't want to be the guy that replaces the legend. You want to be the guy that replaces the guy that replaced the legend.
Right.
And a perfect example at Penn State was Bill O'Brien, who I have the utmost respect for because he took the Penn State job after Paterno.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was a nightmare. I have a lot of respect for him.
That's a tough spot to be in for sure. Following that, that's – yeah.
Well, Doug, have a great week. Congratulations.
Yep.
Heard
Thank
the
you.
Good news. And, we're really happy for you. God bless. Have a great
that.
Week.
Yeah.
Okay, and take care. Go Dawgs!
We'll talk next week. You got it.
Okay.
See ya.
And again, please,
Frank, thank
give
you.
Your,
thanks to all the guests, and have a great week. God bless.
Doug, please give your wife and your son our very best, and we're wishing all the best in the world for all of you.
No, I really appreciate that, Frank, the toast, if you will, that you made via text to me was very well said, and I really appreciate just over the years, how you guys have welcomed me into your broadcasting family, if you will, and the things that you've said and done. And, you know, it goes a long way, you know, because
yeah.
I don't know. I always have my measure of people is, do they give a shit or not? And you clearly do, and I appreciate that. So if I'm in a foxhole, I would expect you to be in it with me.
It's a family. Yeah, well, you know what, Doug? I don't know if you know this. My older two kids are both adopted. And so I know what it's like. And, you know, you're in a little different situation, and you're, you know, with obviously your adoption compared to mine. But, you know, it's really a great thing to do. I know a lot of friends that adopted children, and I just, like Frank said, God bless, and, you know, congratulations. We send out our best.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program has been brought to you by and grateful appreciation of men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services, the doctors and nurses on the first line of COVID, and, of course, the wonderful people in the supermarkets to keep our shelves full. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkep, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwich, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Charles Chuck LeBake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman and Officer Chris from Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County PD, Deputy Josh Myers, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Pope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Hogo, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Blaine Lane, and Deputy Chris Meyer, Polk County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Rodriguez, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless, and have a great week.
stare at hand with mind afraid, so I wish him strength and length.